34. Kushner was by turns frustrated and bemused by other people's confusion about Trump. He's unpredictable, which is a great strength. Nobody knows where that line is that Trump won't cross. According to Kushner, Trump himself does not know. This is the difference between a business person and a politician, in the sense that every day the facts change, and so the line changes too. This was often underscored by a cynical cost-benefit analysis. For instance, in December 2016, prior to taking office, Trump had questioned whether his administration would continue the One China policy that the U.S. has held since the Carter administration. Under the policy, the United States does not recognize the island of Taiwan as an independent nation and instead acknowledges only one China that includes Taiwan. Trump's decision to cast doubt on the policy angered China, and in a February 9, 2017 phone call with Chinese President Xi Jinping, Trump said he would honor it. 2 months later, he welcomed Xi to Mar-a-Lago for a summit. Kushner cast the One China decision as one of cynical pragmatism. President Trump would say that he was going to respect the One China policy, Kushner said. That wasn't that big of a give, because you could always say you wouldn't respect it a day later. Kushner had additional explanations for Trump's fluctuations. The hardest thing that people have in understanding him is they see him as fixed, where he's not a solid. He's fluid in the sense that, and that's a strength. Trump's background in business had taught him, there's no deal until you sign on the line, right? You can make a deal and then you go through it. But until the paper is signed, it's not a deal. And that's how he is. And so, he'll always be flexible. Of course, flexibility can be a strength in business and politics. But Trump's staff and cabinet rarely got a clear definition of direction or policy from the president until he decided or tweeted. Believing that every day the facts change is simply another version of Kellyanne Conway's 2017 statement that there are alternative facts. He's not afraid to step into a controversial situation, Kushner said. I think he's shown over time he's built up his courage to do it. Because he stepped into a lot of situations where people said, if you do this, the world's going to end. And then the next morning, the sun rises. The next evening, the sun sets. By early 2020, Kushner thought Trump had assembled a better and more dedicated White House team than they'd had before. In the beginning, Kushner told others, referring to the first years of the administration, 20% of the people we had thought Trump was saving the world, and 80% thought they were saving the world from Trump. Now I think we have the inverse. I think 80 of the people working for him think that he's saving the world, and 20%, maybe less now, think they're saving the world from Trump. Let that analysis sink in. 20% of the president's staff think they are saving the world from the president. Kushner suggested that Trump had developed a new appreciation for some of the people who had been with him since the beginning of his administration. As the economic tasks of 2020 grew and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin played a larger and larger role, Kushner told the president, "This is when you'll really appreciate having the neurotic New York Jews around." Kushner said one of Trump's greatest strengths was he somehow manages to have his enemies self-destruct and make stupid mistakes. He's just able to play the media like a fiddle, and the Democrats too. They run like dogs after a fire truck, chasing whatever he throws out there. And then he solves the problem and does the next. Then they go on to the next thing. The question was, he said, what is the media obsessed with at a different moment? Because they've been melting down about something every day for as long as I've been in this politics business for a couple of years. And then, what's really happening? It's like a buffet where they'll always eat the worst thing you give them. In meetings, Kushner said, Trump was an expert at cross-examination. He's an expert at reading people's tells. He won't say, let me go with a nuanced position. He'll, in a meeting, say, well, what if we do 100? They'll say, oh, you can't do that. And then he'll say, well, what if we do 0? It's like, holy shit, it's whiplash. So that's his way of reading people, is to see how certain are they of their position. Do they hold their ground? Do they buckle? So that's just his style. And by the way, Kushner added, that's why the most dangerous people around the president are overconfident idiots. It was apparently a reference to Mattis, Tillerson, and former White House economic advisor Gary Cohn. All had left. If you look at the evolution over time, we've gotten rid of a lot of the overconfident idiots. And now, he's got a lot more thoughtful people who kind of know their place and know what to do. According to Kushner, one of Trump's greatest impacts was on the Republican Party. Neither party is really a party. They're collections of tribes, he observed at one White House meeting. The Republican Party was a collection of a bunch of tribes. Look at the Republican Party platform. It's a document meant to piss people off, basically, because it's done by activists. Kushner's theory was there was a disproportionality between what issues people are vocal on and what the people, the voters, really care about. Trump had united the Republican Party behind himself. I don't think it's even about the issues, Kushner said. I think it's about the attitude. He said Trump did a full, hostile takeover of the Republican Party. Construction of the wall along the Mexico-U.S. border, paid for by the government of Mexico, was a central tenet of Trump's 2016 campaign and first on Kushner's list of things Trump needed to accomplish to win re-election in 2020. Mexico refused to pay, and 5 days after his inauguration, Trump had signed an executive order directing the Department of Homeland Security to identify and allocate all possible sources of federal funding. A DHS report said the wall would cost over $20 billion. In the fall of 2019, Trump made Kushner the boss of the border wall. Kushner's approach was straight out of business school, with meticulous files and charts and review meetings every 2 weeks. At one meeting on February 14, 2020, Kushner gathered 15 people and walked through a series of questions. Do we have the contracts for each section of the wall? Were they on time? What decisions needed to be made? Where were the bottlenecks? How to get costs down? Where was the money coming from? Which Pentagon account? What's the feedback from the people on the ground? By Kushner's calculations, they had built 121.4 miles of wall. But Customs and Border Protection, CBP, said 99 miles of that was new border wall system constructed in place of dilapidated and/or outdated designs. In other words, replacement or repair. 10 miles were secondary border wall. 1 mile was of new wall in locations where no wall previously existed. Kushner's goal was to build, replace, or repair 7 to 8 miles a week and reach 400 miles by the end of the year. It wouldn't be complete yet, so they would be building the wall into 2021, presuming Trump was reelected. The hardest part was buying land. It's more complicated than I thought, Kushner told others. Obtaining the funding had proved difficult. Trump worked every lever of the federal government. He got into a standoff with Congress, leading to a 35-day government shutdown in December 2018 and January 2019, the country's longest. He declared a national emergency in February 2019 to force a release of funds from the Department of Defense, fighting legal battles at every stage, and ultimately winning a 5-4 Supreme Court case in July 2019. They had muscled the system and busted through it, Kushner said. The system's designed to do nothing. Liberated from constraints, they moved money from Pentagon budgets for construction and anti-drug programs to pay for the wall. We looked under every seat cushion and found all the money we needed, Kushner said. The wall was also not being built exactly where Trump had wanted. Instead, it was being built in what the CBP had identified for Trump and Kushner as high-traffic areas. "It is a smart wall," Kushner said. CBP had drones, sensors, and cameras, so they covered more ground with fewer people. Illegal border crossings were down. Drug seizures were up. Kushner hoped the return on investment might mean the wall would pay for itself. Every 2 weeks, Kushner gave Trump an update on wall construction. The president was not interested in incremental progress. "Get the fucking thing done," Trump said. Kushner considered one of Trump's greatest skills figuring out how to trigger the other side by picking fights with them where he makes them take stupid positions. He recalled Trump's July 27, 2019 tweets about the district represented by the late black Democratic Congressman Elijah Cummings, which included Baltimore. "Cumming District is a disgusting, rat and rodent-infested mess," Trump had tweeted. "No human being would want to live there." Kushner saw this as baiting the Democrats. When he did the tweet on Elijah Cummings, the president was saying, "This is great. Let them defend Baltimore," Kushner told an associate. "The Democrats are getting so crazy, they're basically defending Baltimore. When you get to the next election, he's tied them to all these stupid positions because they'd rather attack him than actually be rational." Cummings's former district is in the top half of congressional districts in the median household income, home prices, and education levels. It has the second highest income of any majority black congressional district in the country. Chris Wallace had Mick Mulvaney, then the acting White House chief of staff, on his Sunday show the next day. "This seems, Mick," Wallace said, "to be the worst kind of racial stereotype." Mulvaney tried to interrupt. "Let me finish," Wallace said. "Racial stereotyping. Black congressman, majority black district. I mean, no human being would want to live there? Is he saying people that live in Baltimore are not human beings?" "I think you're spending way too much time reading between the lines," Mulvaney said. "I'm not reading between the lines," Wallace replied. "I'm reading the lines."